Good evening, good morning. Thank you for tuning in to the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm your host for this evening. I'm Dave Schrader. Have you ever wondered if things are not always as they seem? Well, our guest this evening is going to talk to us about his book, The New Conspiracy Handbook, which offers an opportunity to see a little of what goes on behind the curtain. This is your guide to 25 brand new theories that take you beyond the usual topics and will actually give you a new perspective on our culture and on history. From music to sports, from science to politics, The New Conspiracy Handbook tackles a wide variety of topics. Our guest, Simon Trinculo, this evening will spend the next 4 hours discussing these strange conspiracies, and we'll also talk to him about his other book. Very fascinating. It's about 31 suspicious suicides. You'll have to hear this to believe it yourself. Many of these people were involved in stories, and it just seems like their deaths are a little too convenient. It's going to be a weird night of conspiracies. We want to hear your calls. We'll be opening up phone lines throughout the show. Stay tuned. We've got a great one on tap for you here on Coast to Coast AM. Simon Trinculo was born and raised in Charlotte, North Carolina. He earned a bachelor's degree in mathematics from the University of North Carolina and went on to earn a law degree from the University of Richmond. Trinculo is the author of two books, The New Conspiracy Handbook, From G.I. Joe to Lady Gaga, 25 Truths You Won't Find on Wikipedia, and The New Conspiracy Handbook, 31 Suspicious Suicides. Trinculo is also a frequent contributor to the alternative news website, 2127news.net. He also practices law back in his hometown of Charlotte, where he lives with his beautiful fiance, Rebecca. Let's welcome to Coast AM, Simon Trinculo. Simon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Conspiracy theories. This is something people are fascinated by. They cling to them. They look for them. It's something that I'm intrigued by myself, but I often wonder, as you're doing research for a book like this, like both of these, do you ever get so wound up in it that you start seeing a conspiracy thread in everything, or can you keep an objective viewpoint and just look at the main stories and have some fun with it that way?
Yeah, I think I'm more of in the latter camp. I know there are a lot of people who take this stuff very seriously. I like more to enjoy the mystery of it. I'm not somebody who is going to say this theory is absolutely true, or, you know, I don't have an axe to grind. I just like to wonder, question, and I kind of enjoy that there are things out there that we don't know one way or another, which is the actual truth.
Why do you think people are so quick to jump on the conspiracy bandwagon about any kind of story, from celebrity deaths to political ambitions to natural disasters? People always seem to want to believe there's some nefarious role by some dark overlord somewhere pulling these strings.
Well, I think part of it is that the media has been proven to be unreliable at times. And once people start to get a taste of a story where it just doesn't seem right, or later, years later, it's officially admitted to, then it really kind of takes away the public's confidence that what they're being told on TV and on the mainstream internet sites, that's really truly what's going on, or if it's just the story that we're all being fed.
Like many of us, the first conspiracy I really started to hear about and remember taking notice of was the Kennedy conspiracy, mainly because I was born on November 22nd. So it's always associated with my birthday year after year, where everybody else is thinking happy thoughts. I'm always reminded of the death and murder of one of our most beloved United States presidents. What really got you involved into researching conspiracy theories?
Yeah, I think that is about the same for me. JFK assassination was really the first one where I was able to find people who weren't just jumping to any conclusion they could think of, but honest, serious researchers who would dismiss crazy theories and would only accept well-researched ideas, and I guess that really intrigued me and introduced me to like maybe there is something a little to all of this,
When you start looking at conspiracy theories, especially some of the, there's the 9/11 conspiracy, which, we just passed the 13th anniversary of that tragedy, to the tsunami conspiracies, to, JFK, Martin Luther King, Marilyn Monroe, even the conspiracies surrounding her death. Was she really just a victim of her own celebrity, and pills and drugs got the best of her in the long run? Or was she truly murdered? And was she murdered because she was going to come forward with information regarding her illicit affairs with JFK and Bobby? Or, as some people believe, was she about to go public with the information JFK had told her about aliens and UFOs? There's all of this, want and desire to jump on the bandwagon and understand these things and follow these bizarre threads. When you're researching for this, were there any conspiracies that are in the mainstream that people think about all the time that when you just research it and start to look at it, you just think this is just too many loose strings tied together that, on the whole, yeah, they look intriguing, but when you start to pull those strings, they just fall apart too easily?
Yes, one that we actually discuss in our book is, a lot of people think that the lunar landings were faked. And I'll admit that there is some pretty convincing stuff out there, but for me, it's hard for me to accept something that the entire scientific community could be fooled. And where that got my interest in the research and what we talk about in the book is that perhaps there's a devious motive behind pushing for this fake lunar landing theory, because what the people in control want to do is they want there to be just absolutely ridiculous theories out there to be ridiculed, so that all of the theories can kind of all be lumped together. And I found it interesting looking at the fake lunar landing theory that Fox did several 1-hour specials on how, pushing forward this theory, is it true? Here's all the evidence. But you don't see the major networks do that kind of coverage for like the really serious conspiracy theories like JFK assassination or like 9/11. The big ones that I think have a lot more serious followers and a lot more in-depth research, they don't touch, but they like to put forth the ones that are easy for people to ridicule, because that's kind of how they keep the truth of these conspiracy theories down, is by ridicule.
Right, and I agree with you. You have things like that. I've been fascinated by that specific conspiracy because there's so many different variations of the conspiracy, right? There's the conspiracy that it didn't take place. There's a conspiracy that it did take place, but that actually we'd been to the moon before the one that was televised and alerted people to the fact that we were there. Then there's the theory that while we were there, we were being visited by aliens, and that the photos have been doctored, photoshopped, the prior to Photoshop, but the way they were doctored to eliminate UFOs that were reflected in the visors of the astronauts, and so on and so forth. It's funny how you've got so many that come down on these conspiracy angles and believe them wholeheartedly, and to watch the conspiracy theorists butt heads over their own conspiracies. I've always enjoyed just kind of sitting back and watching those borders clash as well. And when you look at the idea of it didn't take place, or it did take place and that there was alien interaction, do you believe either one of those possibilities?
Oh, that's tough. I guess the thing with aliens is that if they have advanced technology, then you can never really write anything off, because you don't know what they're capable of. And the universe is so large, and we know we're discovering, like, every year, you know, even planets that are similar to Earth and could possibly have life forms. It seems like there must be alien life out there somewhere, but whether or not they're visiting here, if they are, they're doing a pretty good job of keeping it quiet.
Or are they? there's sightings of UFOs around the world. As a matter of fact, just here in Minnesota tonight, I received an email prior to the show that there was over, I think near Maple Grove, Minnesota, there was a sighting of 10 orange lights up in the sky that seemed to be moving in a dynamic way together. Now, you know, the orange lights I put off pretty quickly because of those Chinese lanterns that people seem interested in sending off. But there's UFO, you know, visuals everywhere and some really compelling stuff that's popping up out there. So I think they might be actually interacting. But again, that's why, you know, when people start to weave and I don't know, you know, I love a good story personally. When Simon, when you're researching some of these different topics and looking at things like the JFK assassination, the Marilyn Monroe death, and you see, does it impress you more when there's, you know, ulterior motives like, okay, she was murdered not just because she had information about JFK and Bobby, but that she was also possibly going to come forth about UFOs? Or do you think that takes away from the validity of the fact that she might have been murdered because she was truly involved in an affair with these very influential, powerful men and might have been willing to come forward with it?
I tend to lean more towards the powerful men side. It's about, to me, I guess, making the books accessible. I really want to come up with theories that hopefully people of all kinds of different backgrounds and beliefs, it will kind of make sense to them. And so I tend to lean against too much stuff that will automatically turn somebody off to it. Where I personally like to be open to ideas such as, you know, it would be fantastic if Monroe did have knowledge of extraterrestrial activity, but I would be concerned as a writer that I'm not trying to make theories that rest on ideas that a lot of people are just going to dismiss right off the bat.
Well, and that's, you know, that's a pretty bold statement to make as well, because people are so willing to jump on the conspiracy theorists and their versions because, you know, everybody wants to have a say in these type of topics. And that's why I think it's so fascinating to so many people and why there are shows dedicated to the conspiracy angle, especially, you know, you've got people like Jesse Ventura, who is certainly very outspoken, has been a guest on Coast to Coast and on my show, Darkness Radio, and, you know, believes that there is this dark underlying kind of covert world that just surrounds us at all times, that is in balance of trying to keep us afloat without crushing us, but keeping us at the balance where they could crush us at any time. When I look at those kind of conspiracies, it you know, I step back because, first of all, and I'm not trying to be naive in any way, shape, or form, but that just, it boggles my mind to the point where I can't even be comfortable if I walk around in a state of constantly believing everybody's out to get me or upset the apple cart. And again, it doesn't mean I don't think that there is definitely some nefarious things going on and that our government is behind it, but it gets tough. When you were looking into all of this, did it ever, were there times you had to step back and just be like, I need a couple of days not to think about what's going on in the world around us and why people are doing the things they're doing?
Well, you know, I guess I'm pretty fearless, I guess, when it comes to that. I don't know how, but exactly, but I seem to be able to shield myself from, I guess, the kind of the paranoia or the, you know, everyone's out to get me sort of feeling that I do kind of see, like, if you get too much into conspiracy theories, it's like that. But I guess I just try to keep the approach of the world. The world is how the world is, and it's not unique to America or this time. It's how humans build society, that those who have the power will use that power to keep their power. Just kind of, it's human nature, and it's probably not ever going to change. I think maybe today those in power are more sophisticated at it, perhaps. But then again, I don't know. You could maybe go back to the ancient Romans, and the Caesars back then seemed to have a very good grasp of having the population like them too. So, I don't know. I noticed a lot of people in conspiracy theories, like groups like the Illuminati or Freemasons, which to me is like shorthand, because it's very difficult to talk simply about a vast system. And it's not always that there is a set group of people directly discussing, this is how we're going to do X, this is how we're going to do Y, this is how we're going to keep these people down. A lot of the times, it's the people, yes, but it's also the system, and everyone sort of does their part naturally in their own self-interest, and together it leads to that effect.
Let's crack the nut here with the new book, the new conspiracy handbook, From G.I. Joe to Lady Gaga, 25 Truths You Won't Find on Wikipedia. What was, in your opinion, we've got about 3 minutes left in this segment, what's one of the goofiest or funniest conspiracies that you put together in that book that just was fun to kind of research and surprised you with the information you were able to get?
Fun and goofy. We did one on Herman Cain, if you recall, ran for president in the GOP, and then was let go. He dropped out of the race because of these sexual harassment scandals. But we looked into it, and it turns out there's a lot of evidence that he never wanted to be president, that he was just doing the whole thing as a kind of glorified book tour, and to get a lot of publicity, get a spot hosting radio shows, and that when he started to find himself leading in the polls, he panicked, and it's our theory that perhaps he's the one who had people come forward with the sexual harassment claims so it would let him bow out gracefully, because he really had no intention of ever running for president.
What kind of validity do you give to that story? Do you believe that that is true? And I know, again, you don't always necessarily want to come down one way or another, but in that, it sounds so absurd, because there's a lot of money that he sank into his own cause and his own, running to get involved in this, to just kind of fritter that away in order to get jobs in radio and consulting gigs seems kind of counterproductive.
I don't have the numbers, but I'm pretty sure that the amount of books he sold was more profit than it was his personal finances put into running.
Well, you know, I guess I could see a lot of people, and he's the one that chose Sarah Palin as a running mate. Is that right?
Oh, no, we're not talking John McCain. This is Herman Cain.
Oh, Herman Cain. Sorry. My mind is fluttering here early in the show as well. So Herman Cain, that's right, when he was doing this. Now, when you were doing the research, were you talking to any people involved? Was this just doing the research through the newspaper articles and trying to piece this together from hints and clues you felt were already out there? Or were you getting direct information from inside sources?
I wish I could say that we had some direct inside sources, but our theories tend to just be, we take the news items and I develop, what ifs, fun what ifs, that upon doing the research, a lot of the times there's actually quite a bit of evidence that backs it up.
All right, we've got just a few seconds here. I want to make sure people know. What's your website so they can go check out your website and get information there as well?
Right now, we're just on Facebook and Twitter, Simon Trinculo. And you can buy the books on Amazon. Just Google New Conspiracy Handbook. They should both come up.
And I know we've got some links up at coasttocoastam.com as well if you want to follow along and get some more information on our guest. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the other conspiracies that he covers in the new Conspiracy Handbook. We'll also open up phone lines in the next hour if you'd like to weigh in on conspiracy theories, what you think are some of the most fascinating, perhaps most far-fetched, unbelievable, or the ones that you think that people aren't paying close enough attention to. We'll do that at the top of the next hour. And then later on in the show, 31. Suspicious suicides. Stay tuned. We've got a lot more coming your way tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Tonight, bizarre and strange, controversial conspiracy theories. A little bit later, we're going to talk about a second book that's been written talking about 31 suspicious suicides. That's what you can expect tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Tomorrow night, I'll be back. We'll be talking about angels versus demons. My special guest for the evening, Adam Bly. We'll discuss angels' roles in our life. Are they real? Do they exist? And can we communicate with them? Do they really manifest and help us and make themselves known? We'll also be taking your calls. We want to hear if you've ever had an experience with an angel encounter. And then later on in the show, demons. As Adam has worked very closely with the Catholic Church for a number of years, assisting in exorcisms, demonic possessions, and oppression, we'll find out the truth from him. And with this rash of strange, I guess, paranormal activity that seems to be taking place all around the world, and people beginning to become more and more paranoid of possession, oppression, attachments, and the fact that the Vatican is pushing harder for more exorcists around the world. Is this something we should be taking note of? We'll hear from the man who's been there and seen this firsthand. We'll also take your calls, find out a little bit more about demonic possession from your perspective. What do you believe? And have you had an experience? Have you seen somebody that you believe may be affected by demons? We'll talk about that tomorrow night. We've got so much more to cover. Stay tuned. We've got more Coast to Coast AM right after this. Simon Trinculo, our guest this evening. The new conspiracy handbook from G.I. Joe to Lady Gaga. 25 truths you won't find on Wikipedia. That's the book we're discussing in the first hour. Again, we'll open up phone lines on Coast to Coast AM at the top of the hour if you'd like to weigh in on conspiracy theories with your thoughts on them. Now, as an attorney yourself, let's look at one of the weirder cases that you cover in the book, the O.J. Simpson trials. Talk to me a little bit about this, Simon. What do you believe went on with this man who was very apparently clearly guilty? How did he get off and manage to remain scot-free for as long as he did?
Well, if you look, this isn't just my opinion. In the book, we have a long list of legal experts, you know, Harvard law professors, who all of whom heavily criticized the prosecution in that case, that they made a number of errors, strange, bizarre errors. Like, they put on a six-month case for what's a simple homicide case. In comparison, the Oklahoma City bombing, that was a much more complicated case, and that was done in 3 weeks. When you put jurors through a six-month process, they're going to think that you don't really have any strong evidence. They're going to resent sitting there. They're going to miss the key points because they're just going to get day after day after day of unimportant stuff. And there were also the problems with their jury selection. They had the trial moved away from where it should have been held by law. Where it would naturally have been held would have been a almost entirely white neighborhood, because that's where the crime took place. And despite what their own jury consultants told them, they moved it to a larger African-American community, where they were told that African-American women would be the biggest group of people sympathetic to OJ, and they didn't try to fight that at all and ended up with, I believe, four African-American women on the jury.
So you think it was conspiratorial the way they handled it to just try to avoid the riots like they did around Rodney King?
Yes, that's exactly it. The Rodney King riots happened just 2 years before the O.J. Simpson, well, before the murder took place in the same city of Los Angeles. In that case, during those riots, 53 people died. Thousands of people were injured. An estimated $1 billion of damage was done during those riots. And so if you consider, go back in time and you think about it, at the time of O.J.'s trial, the opinion on if he was innocent or guilty across the nation largely went along racial lines. And you have to consider, if you're the mayor of L.A. or a top government official in L.A., and you're looking at this case, which was way bigger than the Rodney King case, you had to wonder what the citizens of L.A., what reaction were they going to have if O.J. was found guilty. Now, we don't know for sure. Maybe there wouldn't have been any riots, but, you know, worst-case scenario is they could have had riots that were 20 times worse than the Rodney King riots.
But the difference in that fact, though, as I understand, I mean, Rodney King was, a common, everyday American who, you know, took a severe beating and was part of the story. And certainly he had his own flaws and problems, but he took this beating, which, and especially in today's societies, we're watching the amping up of police violence. You know, it that's what I think really captured the attention. I think the reason people reacted so poorly to the Rodney King verdict was that it seemed unfair to him. Whereas in the case with O.J. Simpson, most of the evidence pointed to the fact that this guy had pulled off a heinous crime. It wasn't just some blue-collar worker that got trounced by the police. This was a well-respected, famous man who appeared to be paying his way out of this major issue that he had created in his life. Now, again, I know he still is considered innocent in the case, except in the civil case. So, you know, allegedly he did these horrendous crimes, but there's so much of the evidence that points to this. And it seemed like the public defender, or I'm sorry, not public defender, but the state, the prosecutor had such a weak way of presenting some of the cases, you know, even down to the, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit with the gloves. When you could see that this man was flexing his hand, trying to shove it into a glove, and leather gloves are going to be tight and snug anyway. Plus he's got a rubber glove on and he's open, you know, he's posing his hand to make it look tighter. And people are buying this circus that's going on around them. It just seems that even with the prosecution screwing it up, that there was still, you know, people in the jury that should be seeing through this type of deal. I don't know that I necessarily buy that it was to avoid a Rodney King like verdict. I was thinking that there would have been more of an outcry, which there was, from I think a global audience regarding what happened when OJ was found not guilty.
Well, I understand your perspective very well. It's the same way I thought about the case back in the day when it was happening. But I think it's important to understand that perspective that you and I might have is not necessarily the same perspective that the African American community in Los Angeles probably had, especially when it regards to the police. And, the other perspective is that you could look at that trial and go, here is evidence being presented by a cop with a long history of racism, you know, who's on the stand lying about his use of the N-word. For a community that had just been through the Rodney King thing, that had seen, you know, years, if not decades, of, from their perception, abuse by the police, I could very easily see how a lot of people saw this as them doing, the police, the man, doing whatever it took to, take down a black guy who was successful.
Well, the defense, you know, being that role, I could see them exploiting the race card very easily, because that's a great way to go because of what happened with Rodney King. But the prosecution trying to protect that, it just doesn't seem to mesh for me. But it, I guess that's what's so interesting with conspiracy theories, right? You look at all the different angles of them, and even though there's some points to it that sound very plausible, there's still sides that just it and maybe that's why they are so popular. You just can't possibly wrap your head around how this could go any other way. Sometimes it just looks like inept people doing stupid things that cause it to happen, and not really so much of a threat of conspiratorial angle involved in the story. OJ certainly a very interesting case, and I guess in time it will tell where it all plays out, especially with that book, If I Did It, that he wrote and was basically admitting how he would have done it if he did, which again seems to be a strange way to cash in and try to put something out there, and in a sense feels almost like he's flaunting it in the face of the world that this is how he would have gone about making this crime happen. So I wonder if anybody had ever, did you see in your research with that, did anybody ever take a look at that book and look at the angles he put in there to see if any new evidence was revealed that, I know you can't go after double jeopardy on it, but that actually lined up that would prove that, you know, maybe he gave his hand away a little too much with that information that he was going to put in the book?
Yes, I believe, like, if you were to take the book as a literal confession, there were some details in it regarding what caused the argument, how he prepared, why he acted the way he did. I believe that's almost entirely what the book is about. It's not simply him rehashing the public facts that everybody knew. It's really a fascinating kind of finish to that whole part of American history that I don't know of any other accused killer who gets off and then writes a book essentially confessing to it.
Yeah, definitely a strange case. Let's talk about another pop culture icon, G.I. Joe. Now, you cover this in the book as well. And when I mentioned it, I had a lot of people that emailed me when we were talking on Darkness Radio this week about the fact that I'd be hosting tonight, and that the book covered everything from G.I. Joe to Lady Gaga. People wrote to me and they go, what in God's green earth could there possibly be a conspiracy theory dealing with a plastic toy? What can you tell us about G.I. Joe and how that works into it?
Oh, it's really interesting. The story kind of starts in the mid-70s. There's this concept Orwell talks about, a perpetual war. And if you're a weapons contractor, a war profiteer, this perpetual war thing is what you really, that's your end result that you want, because that means taxpayer money going straight to you. But by the mid-70s, the Vietnam conflict had just turned the American people away from such warfare. And there's a problem when you go to war with a country, if you want perpetual war, is that you either defeat the country or you fail to defeat the country. And in a democracy, eventually the people go, well, it looks like we're not going to defeat them. And there's a small, at the time, small, relatively obscure toy company called Hasbro. And they kind of had the same problems that the military contractors did, in that they had these large, like, dolls for G.I. Joe that they had started in the 60s. But the Vietnam War was so unpopular, they had to pull the line. And they were coming into the 80s. Just barely getting by. I think they had Mr. Potato Head was their only toy at that time that anybody would know. And, you know, that's just not like the super most profitable thing to get into, because you buy Mr. Potato Head once and you probably aren't going to buy like five others. So
But G.I. Joe, I mean, wasn't that a staple? I grew up in the 70s, and every kid I knew had a G.I. Joe. That seemed to be the heyday for G.I. Joe. Commercials, storylines. Now, of course, the 80s, they revamped what G.I. Joe was and turned it into a cartoon about a team as opposed to the singular character of G.I. Joe. But Hasbro, I would have thought that they would have done amazing during the 70s because of the popularity of the character. And like I said, I don't think I knew a boy throughout 74 to 79 that didn't own at least one or two G.I. Joes.
Well, that's probably more true in the earlier 70s because they did not sell G.I. Joe between 1976 and when they reissued it in 1982. But that's the reissue is where the conspiracy comes in, and it's what you were talking about there. Not just they made it their team, but what's particularly interesting was the bad guys that they were now facing. You would think in the 80s, the natural enemy of an American army thing, I would have said communism. You know, the Cold War was still very hot back then, and that's when I grew up, was the 80s, and it really was like, all you could hear about was Soviet Union, anti-communism, and fight for democracy, but that's not who they had G.I. Joe fight against. Instead, they came up with this terrorist organization that had no clear goals. They had no, country of origin. They had no clear source of where their financing was coming from. Most of their soldiers were kind of nameless. They all wore masks. And perhaps most importantly was no matter how many times the Cobra, the bad guys that G.I. Joe fought, no matter how many times G.I. Joe would defeat them, they would just keep coming back.
Well, and I think that was a marketing strategy, certainly as a toy company. If you know, it's one thing you make the, and again, the 80s, kind of the beginning and the opening of the political correctness movement, to an alarming rate of worrying about offending everybody. Not that I think they should have made, Chinese or Japanese dolls as our villains or Russian dolls and these characters, but trying to make these faceless enemy that could be anybody, which is basically what we're really fighting now in the world of terrorism, is that all of these faceless organizations, we don't know where the next enemy seems to be coming from. It almost seems foreshadowing to what we could expect in the real world. So I kind of understand why they would do that with their toy line, again, utilizing it. But do you think that they used the G.I. Joe and the characters to try to help because the 70s were so tumultuous with the Vietnam War and everything? Do you think that this was their way to pacify and kind of win over, especially young America, again, to the idea that, we have heroes and that they are part of the military service and trying to, spin it and put a positive shine on characters like that?
Well, I would take it one step further. I think the evidence suggests that they were trying to introduce this idea that our army doesn't fight against countries, that it fights against these sort of mysterious forces without any clear goal or funding. And I'd like to back that up a little bit. As I was saying, Hasbro at the time, their G.I. Joe, before they reintroduced it, it hadn't been out for 6 years. Their biggest toy was Mr. Potato Head. Yet
right, and there
they
you have something.
Out.
Yeah, they have something they're able to spin and start making a positive light again and bring it out there. We've got so many other weird, bizarre pop culture conspiracies we'll cover in the next hour. We're also opening up phone lines if you'd like to talk about conspiracy theories, your thoughts on why they're so popular, or conspiracy theories you think people overlook or maybe put too much stock into. We want to hear from you. Phone lines will be open. Stay tuned. Coast to Coast AM continues right after this.